the Happy Afloat podcast, tales of family adventures at sea.
Hello and welcome aboard. Make yourself at home. I am Jason, skipper of Happy Float. Meet my motley crew. Leon.
Hello.
Conrad.
Ahoy there, shipmates.
And my lovely wife, Sarah.
Hello. If you are new to the podcast, welcome.
But don't start here.
If you want to follow this sailing adventure from the beginning, start at episode 13. Which is part one of this story.
And if you are interested in the whys and hows of family sailing, jump into the Wayback Machine and fire up episode 2 of Why Go Family Sailing.
For old hands, strap in.
This is going to be a long one.
In this episode,
we finally set foot on Scottish soil.
We spend the night anchored in Loch Ness.
And we continue our hunt for the lesser spotted camping gas.
More tales from our summer adventure.
Okay, now, where did we get to last time?
We had just arrived at Clacknahary, the sea lock into the Caledonian Canal.
We'd been at sea for 56 hours, almost 2.5 days.
And we were desperate to plant our feet on Scottish soil.
But the lock gates were broken.
Oh, hello, my name's Sarah. I spoke to you this morning. I'm from Yacht Happy Afloat. Hello. How are things progressing with the sea lock? Right outside the gate. So that's like best part of 2 hours then from now. It's 1:10 now. That's fine. Shall I listen out on 74 and you radio us up and let us know one way or the other? Good plan. You want to just anchor, do you?
Yeah.
Yeah, all right. We'll drop the hook. Okay, yeah, that's fine. We'll be just out here then. All right then. Cheers, bye-bye. It's not perfect, but they're going to let boats in at 2:50. She said she'll give us a call back in half an hour to let us know if we can go in the first lock anyway.
Right, get ready to drop the anchor. Ready? Four under the keel. That seems to have worked.
Clacknahary lock, Clacknahary lock, Sequoia, over.
It was getting busy with more boats keen to lock in.
With the anchor down, it must be time for lunch.
During our meal, we got the call from the lock keeper.
Happy afloat. This is Clacknahary Sea Lock, over. Happy afloat. Are you okay to come in now, off though, over?
Yeah, we're good. Which side two would you like us to come in, over?
Can you do the port side two, please, over?
Yeah, we'll do port side two and come into the lock.
Thank you. Quite sorry. See you off.
Right, boys, all on deck.
Okay.
We're going to port side two, aren't we?
Let's get the anchor up first, though.
Yeah. Right.
Which one's Jupiter going?
He's going starboard side two.
Happy Afloat was the last boat to squeeze into the lock.
Get ready with the lines. Sides.
We had left Chatham 2 weeks ago.
And 560 nautical miles had passed under our keel.
Now we just needed to be raised up a few metres before we could step onto the soil of Scotland.
We had a small world encounter. Next to us in the lock was a local boat. Not a local Scottish boat.
Local as in a boat from the River Medway, our home waters.
Yacht Jupiter had set off 8 weeks ago.
Slowly making their way northwards.
The couple on board were taking a year out to go sailing, wherever the wind blew them.
The lock gates closed behind us and the water level started to rise.
The start of the third transit of the canal had begun.
In a few minutes, we were able to step off the boat while the lock filled.
Congratulations, dear.
Thank you.
Making it to Scotland. Give me a handshake.
Hey, we finally made it.
Mwah. At long last. What channel is the marina on?
We had finally made it to Scotland.
Hooray!
Booking into the canal was a painless exercise, as I had completed the process online earlier that day.
Okay, what's the deal with the Cali Canal?
You lock in, you're required to show them your boat insurance, and then you purchase a 7-day transit ticket to go across the canal. And you can buy a return ticket.
And in that case, what does it cost?
We paid, for us, it was £260 for a 7-night transit ticket. And that works out to be about £37 a night, which is comparable to 7 nights in marinas.
Yeah, and that's for 12 metres, isn't it?
Yeah, for 12-metre boat.
Okay, well, I think we need to explain what the Caledonian Canal is for the uninitiated.
Opened in 1822, the canal is 50 nautical miles long and links the east and west coasts of Scotland,
allowing seagoing vessels to take a shortcut through the heart of Scotland.
About a third of the canal is man-made, linking various freshwater bodies, including the famous Loch Ness.
The canal rises to 106 feet above sea level and uses 29 locks to allow boats to travel up and downhill.
There are 4 aqueducts.
And 10 swing bridges.
Correction, 11 swing bridges.
Technically, there were 10 when we entered the canal.
But more about the extra bridge later.
Why do we like the Cali Canal?
I like it because it's about 7 days of no late nights or no late nights sailing.
Yeah, because it's only open during office hours, isn't it?
Yeah. So by sort of 5 o'clock, you're stuck somewhere.
Yeah, you're not allowed to actually go through the locks, are you?
No.
So you have to park up for the night.
It's quite nice, really. And it's just easy motoring. It's stress-free, isn't it?
Yep. Navigation's pretty easy. You just
point and go.
Keep going in the same direction. There's loads of pontoons along the way, so you can just, you know, stop for your lunch, your coffee.
It's very pretty as well. It's very green.
Yes, it's very nice.
Plus, there's normally ice cream and gift shops on the edges.
Yes, there is some sort of nice touristy bits that we'll probably get on to. And the other thing is you don't have to worry about where the wind's blowing from.
No.
You just keep on chugging.
And we've been blessed with pretty good weather every time we've been through the canal.
Well, by that time it was miserably raining.
It's usually quite nice weather on the east side.
It's the west side. Actually, it does, doesn't it? It's usually at the west side that you get a day of rain.
It's like a mini break, isn't it? After you've done sort of 2 weeks of hard sailing to get up to Scotland.
It's like a mini break.
A mini holiday from sailing because it's a bit more touristy, sort of relaxed.
You don't have to plan ahead.
Mooching along, yes.
Is this why we like the Kelly Canal?
Yes, the Kelly Canal.
It was hot and sunny in Inverness and we were melting wearing our layers of sailing clobber.
We all did a quick costume change and donned our summer clothes.
Really?
I think you were glued to your tracky bottoms and thick fleece the whole trip, weren't you? The lock gates opened and we were in the canal.
One lock down, 28 to go.
Next was a railway spring bridge, which was only a few hundred metres away. Then straight into the second lock.
After this lock, we would be at the Seaport Marina,
where we planned to stay a couple of nights.
Two locks down, 27 to go.
After berthing in the marina, we went off to the shops for some groceries.
The marina is very convenient for the supermarkets, with a Co-op and Lidl just a few minutes walk away, and also a B&M Home Stores and a Currys and a Go Outdoors all in the vicinity.
Okay, it's Seaport Marina review time. What do we think of the facilities here?
Average.
Average? Well, they are the best facilities.
They're the best facilities on the canal, but on the grand scheme of marina facilities, they're very average.
Yeah, it does get progressively worse after these. So if you don't like these facilities, you're going to be pretty disappointed.
They've got laundry, they've got washing machines, they've got tumble dryers.
What they're like, are they any good?
Not great. I didn't use them this time around.
The shower block, what do you think of the showers?
Average.
Yeah, they're okay-ish. They're not amazing.
The office staff are helpful. You can have deliveries to the office.
No moaning and groaning.
No moaning and groaning.
What did you get delivered there?
A watch. What else about the marina? Because on your transit pass, you get one night in the marina.
Yeah, you only have to stay one night before moving along. If you want to stay more than one night, you're supposed to pay for it, aren't you?
Yeah. And then the lecky turned out to be free.
Yeah, I think it depends if the machines are working or not. Yeah. So sometimes they're free.
Even your free night at the marina did not include electricity.
No, and I think when you stop at the other pontoons, if there's electricity, you're supposed to pay for them. But
it's a bit hit and miss.
Yeah, isn't it? If you ever get charged. Yeah.
But they had, due to COVID and lack of engineers, et cetera, they had bollards that weren't working from the charging point of view, but were able to supply the power.
Yeah.
So we got free lecky for the two nights that we stayed at the marina.
Excellent.
And we didn't have to pay for the extra night because, again, with the COVID thing, they were being flexible about how many nights you stayed at the marina.
Even better.
Back at the boat, it was finally time to enjoy our first proper night in Scotland.
The Scottish weather was doing its best and the sun was shining.
It was time to crack open the drinks and snacks for sundowners.
The next day was a very special day in the family calendar.
It was my birthday.
But not just any old birthday.
It was a becoming a teenager birthday.
And what better way to spend a birthday than to take a trip into the city centre of Inverness.
So we could go to my favourite second-hand tech shop.
Which is?
CEX, of course.
And what did you buy after we traipsed all the way into town?
I can't remember what I bought.
I can.
What was it?
Absolutely nothing at all whatsoever. We traipsed all the way into Inverness. You walked around the shop in about 5 minutes, then came out and said, yep, done.
So, Leon, were you in a rush to get back for birthday cake?
Yeah, that sounds like me.
Unfortunately for you.
Inverness also gave us the opportunity to visit a Chandler's to stock up on stuff.
We were in need of a new main sheet.
And needed to hunt down some camping gas.
We tried the well-known Gale Force Marine, who had a glitzy premises in an industrial area a pleasant walk from the city centre along the River Ness.
But Gale Force didn't hit the spot. There was nothing suitable for our rope or gas needs.
We carried on alongside the river, eventually following a scenic footpath that would take us back to Clackenharry Sea Lock.
At the Sea Lock, we just followed the towpath until we found our boat.
We deposited the boys back on board. They were desperate for some gaming time.
And the adults stayed out foraging for gas.
The marina didn't stock any gas, but had made a few suggestions of where we could find the stuff.
We had already tried two of the possible options, and Go Outdoors, where we had purchased a refill a few years ago, and Gale Force had drawn blanks.
Next on the list was Cali Marine, a small private marina and boatyard a short walk further along the towpath.
We have passed Cali Marine every time we have transited the canal.
And although the adults kept talking about visiting, they had never got around to it.
So today, Cali Marine was in luck. We would grace them with our presence and probably our hard-earned cash.
A few minutes later, we were in a well-stocked Chandler's who had everything we needed in the rope department, but no camping gas.
They had excellent customer service too.
We would highly recommend seeking out Cali Marine, who have a small boatyard just over the bridge from Seaport Marina. It's a real gem of a place.
Also, if you do have mechanical issues while on the canal, they have engineers out and about daily along its length, so they should be able to help if the need arises.
We left the Chandlers with many metres of rope, two fenders and a lighter wallet, but no gas.
We did have one more suggestion to try, the local garage.
They had gas, but not camping gas.
We still had one spare bottle, but things were not looking good for a further refill.
It was time to leave Inverness.
But not before we had a crew briefing.
What's the plan, Sarah? Where are we?
Seaport Marina, at the bottom of Muir Town Locks, or however they pronounce it.
Didn't you ask the pronunciation when you're in the office?
No.
You can embarrass yourself all over the radio.
Thank you. No, we're going to go round to the wall and get some diesel while the lock office or marina office is open and they haven't gone off to lunch.
Fill up the water tank. The front one's empty, so we need to fill that up.
Yep. Eat some lunch. Sushi! Phone the lock keepers, tell them we want to go up the locks, and then they can tell us when they want us.
It's all hands on deck. Comrade, you're with Mum, following her instructions and learning the ropes.
Learning the ropes, yeah.
Leon, you're going to be in the stern line.
When we're going along to the diesel berth, should we let the boys go and put the life jackets on? They can be landside and we'll be...
Oh, so you can throw them to nines.
Yeah.
Friday, stormy.
Friday, we'll still be in the lock system on Friday, so you don't have to worry about that.
We'll probably not... I think it's about Tuesday we need to shoo out of the locks.
Yeah, we'll start looking at the weather on the other side. Talk in a few days' time to try and plan what we're going to do.
We've got to be out of the canal system on the 6th. Right, we need to go to the fuel berth in a minute. Right. So if you two get your life jackets on and you can go... And I need to go and unplug the shore power.
All fueled up, it was time for our first flight or staircase of locks.
After we went through a swing bridge...
The bridge swung for us after the lunchtime traffic had eased a little.
After the bridge, there are four locks back to back up to the top of Moortown Flight.
Only 23 more locks to go.
We motored along the canal at the maximum permitted speed of 5 knots.
Which is policed by the lock keepers. We have heard of a couple of boats on the VHF being told off for speeding.
We passed Cali Marine and Wave.
Yeah, next to Cali Marine is Cali Cruises. What do we know about the Cali Cruises, Sarah?
They're charter boats, aren't they? So a lot of people take their weekends or weeks, holidays on them. And quite often they're people with absolutely no boating experience whatsoever.
Yep, their boats are well fendered. There's usually a big rubber bumper strip all the way around them. And they sort of basically, depending on their experience level, obviously, but they tend to sort of bump their way up and down the canal system.
Yeah, and this yachts is... generally kind of try and steer clear of them.
Yeah, it's best to give them a bit of a wide berth because you're not entirely sure how much control they have over the boats. But and rules of the road knowledge could be a bit sketchy.
Yeah. But that said, some of them we've seen and they're brilliant, you know, they manoeuvre brilliantly.
Yeah, but this is the point you're going to start running into them because they're not allowed down the Moortown Flight and they're not allowed down Neptune Staircase. But anyway, between those two points, you will... potentially run into these boats.
The lock keepers do try and warn you that if you're going to be in a lock with the cruisers, don't they? They try and keep them separate.
If you want to have a Caledonian Canal experience and you've not got the time or the inclination to take your boat all the way up there, you could quite easily have a holiday on the canal.
Yeah, it's
not. Just renting one of these boats.
Yeah, they've got nice boats as well, haven't they? All sizes.
Very soon, we encountered another swing bridge.
The Tom Nahurick swing bridge.
Then another bridge, almost adjacent, with a little stretch of canal between them.
Odd. That bridge wasn't here before.
It wasn't on the charts.
Or even in the Caledonian Canal Skipper's Guide handed out at the Sea Lock. It's a great guide, by the way. It has all the info you need to navigate the canal.
This was the brand new Torveen Bridge, built to make sure the traffic still flows into Inverness when one of the bridges is being swung for boats.
In fact, this bridge is so new that after it was swung for us, it would be opened to the road traffic for the very first time ever.
As it turned out, we had a lucky escape from the Seaport Marina. In the days that followed, the new bridge had a few teething issues and was taken back out of commission. Then, the mini heatwave, meaning that the old bridge couldn't be swung for boat traffic.
The heat was expanding the old bridge, so they were afraid if they did swing the bridge, it would not fit back in place.
Then the road traffic wouldn't be able to flow at all in Inverness.
So other boats were stuck for a few days until the weather cooled down.
In our shorts and t-shirt, we enjoyed the canal and the warm weather, gently cruising along.
Waving at the walkers and cyclists on the towpath.
As the canal had no tides or current, this was the perfect opportunity to calibrate the speed log.
Mid-afternoon, we arrived at Dock Garrick.
Or Duck Garrick, as we call it.
Do I need to ask why?
Because there are usually lots of ducks and ducklings.
It's very pretty and very quiet. Well, quiet at least when the last tourist trip boat has stopped for the evening.
We decided not to stay the night this time. We motored on through Dock Garrick Lock.
Only 22 more locks to go.
The reason for the tourist trip boat is that just around the corner was
Loch Ness.
There wasn't going to be much wind overnight and we wanted to anchor in the famous lock.
There was, however, just enough breeze for us to manage a little sail. Yeah.
Nessie spotting, we're in Loch Ness.
Any monster ship? I think we should get the headset out. Sail. Comrade, can you sort out the side, please?
Free to run. Let's go for it.
Is that? Is it? Yeah, sounds like it. This will help get our sailing average back up.
Yeah.
You found one yet?
What?
You got this one, or more than one?
Two.
Yeah, there's two.
Two giant eels. There might be baby ones, but as far as I know, the eels were released about 50 years ago. They were released as giant eels.
Really?
Yeah, it was in a Week Junior article. 1970s. They were secretly released as an attraction. Scientists and researchers now think have worked out that there are eels. Tell me if you see him.
We kept our eyes peeled for strange ripples in the water.
And for strange appearances above the water.
But Nessie must have been at the other end of the loch, 18 nautical miles away.
Loch Ness is so deep that the depth sounder was off the scale.
The deepest reading we got was 181 metres before it was too deep to be read by our equipment.
We anchored overnight
in a lovely little bay by Urquhart Castle.
In the freedom of an anchorage, we decided to have a barbecue.
The only problem was Dad dropped the barbecue lid in the water.
The problem with stainless steel and water
is that it sinks.
Now, in my defence, the barbecue lid is usually tied to the boat when in use.
Except when it's not.
Except when it's not, which it wasn't.
After ruling out diving down to retrieve the lid, as we were in 12 metres of water,
Dad made a crazy plan to get the barbecue lid back on board.
Using the strong magnet at the end of my torch, a Christmas present, attached to a long length of line, I tried to coax the lid back to the surface.
The line came back,
but the lid and the torch didn't.
I'd lost a barbecue lid and my cool torch, and this was in addition to my Leatherman tool, which I had dropped overboard on day one of the summer adventure. Now, the Leatherman Crunch is an amazing tool for boat projects when you need two pairs of hands, but you're on your own, and I was missing it dearly.
Dad was pretty certain that the Leatherman was in the water next to the pontoon at our home berth.
All we needed was a super strong magnet.
There are many super strong magnets available online, designed for fishing metal stuff out of rivers, ponds, etc. Jason convinced me it would be a great addition to the boat as long as we kept it away from the compass.
And the autopilot's gyroscopic compass.
Now, there is a major flaw in Dad's cunning plan that kids cover in Key Stage 1 science.
The rest of you will have to wait until we get back home and I go fishing for my Leatherman to refresh your memory of basic science.
I ordered a new cod barbecue lid for delivery to Oban, and Jason sneaked a barbecue pizza stone onto the order too. Honestly, when would we ever use a pizza stone on a boat?
The next day, the weather was also fine, and it was time to go up another big flight of locks.
But first, we had to motor across the rest of Loch Ness to Fort Augustus.
We didn't see Nessie. Obviously, he must have passed us while we slept in the night and was now at the other end of the lock.
You have to book to go up the Fort Augustus locks, and we had a time slot all to ourselves, no other boats in the lock.
Which has never happened. The flights of locks are usually a very busy pinch point, especially as the Fort Augustus staircase is the only lock flight that holiday charter motorboats are allowed to use.
And the lock keepers do not like to mix the holiday boats with the transiting boats.
While we were waiting for the swing bridge at the bottom of the locks to prepare,
we made a dash to the ice cream parlour for promised ice creams.
Running back to the boat because the bridge was to be swung early with an ice cream in hand is not to be recommended.
It was the fastest and easiest locking in and up process we have ever done.
Just to explain, when at the main locks, one person is required to be on the helm.
That's Dad's job.
And two people are required to walk the boat through the locks with long warps as the stern and bow lines from the towpath.
That's my job to do with Mum.
And I help either Mum or Dad as needed.
The lock keepers are always there to lend a hand if needed too.
On single or double locks, everyone stays on board and the lines are tended from the boat.
We managed to get the five locks of Fort Augustus done in no time at all.
Only another 17 locks to go.
Fort Augustus is quite touristy, so there is generally an audience watching your every move as you go through the locks.
The onlookers generally get in your way while taking pictures, tripping over your lines and blocking your path, as you try not to crash your pride and joy into the lock walls.
Having reached the top of the locks,
we motored onto a place called Kytra.
We arrived just in time to go through the locks before the lockkeeper took a break for lunch.
Another lock done. Just 16 more to go.
So far, we were still always going up in the locks.
But what goes up
must eventually come down.
Since the weather was so nice, I decided that the afternoon was a prime opportunity for the tribe to tackle some easy hand washing.
Passing boats then got full viewing rights to our underwear hanging out to dry.
Fortunately, our pants didn't have too many holes in them. We chose to stay put for the night as it was so peaceful amongst the trees.
If you like the soundscape at Kytra, there will be an extended version at the end of the podcast after the outro music, so enjoy. The crew of the yacht Midnight Oil, which we'd seen in Inverness, tied up on the other side of Kytra Lock.
Sarah had spotted that they had kids on board.
So we went over and asked if they wanted to play.
They did.
Boat kids find their own ways of amusing themselves.
And what could possibly go wrong with a game of catch near a lock?
It was only a matter of time.
Before the ball went in the lock.
And was then retrieved out with our fishing net.
Only to go in again.
How many times did the ball go in?
5, 10.
There's quite a few I seem to remember.
One time it took about 10 minutes to get it back out again because it got stuck right in the middle.
Okay, all good fun.
When the midges started to come out,
it was time to say our goodbyes to our new friends.
And make a hasty retreat back to midge-free safety in the boat.
The next day, we headed on to Loch Oik.
Going through another lock and swing bridge on the way.
Only 15 more locks to go.
The main channel in the canal is deep, with a minimum depth of around 4 metres.
Out of the channel, the depths are not charted.
It was almost coffee and cake time, and there was a tempting pontoon to stop at next to the ruin of Invergarry Castle.
Well, there was a floating pontoon, so how shallow could it be?
The wreck near the pontoon was a bit ominous.
I hope it's deep enough.
So, how is the deck? It's a bit too shallow then for the abandoned plans. Mm-hmm. So you have the issue if you can't get off if you get stuck on. I suppose you get motor cruisers. Depth isn't such an issue. Mm-hmm.
It's deep here. I'm just worried about how deep it gets when you get onto it.
That's a big wreck.
Yeah, that might be us in a few minutes. Almost there.
Yes. Oh, I see what they're doing. They're trying to put that music on just so they can avoid...
We slowly edged towards the pontoon. The water was very shallow.
The depth alarm was beeping at us impatiently, as if to say, "Time to turn around now."
I was slightly panicking. What to do if we went aground in a tideless area?
Although tideless, the lock does feed hydroelectric generators and the water level can drop.
We had to hope that the locals didn't have the same idea as us and started to boil their electric kettles.
Like most yachts, the depth sounder is in front of the keel.
So when we had a couple of centimetres left under the boat, it was time to stop before we ran aground. Scotland is rocky, and I didn't want to scrape off my anti-fouling.
And the water was so clear we could see the large rocks from the surface.
Only half the boat had made it into the pontoon before we ran out of water.
We tied off what we could and sent the boys off to explore, armed with a set of walkie-talkies.
We have a set of 4 Icon personal mobile radios on the licence-free 446 frequency.
These are perfect in remote locales with no phone reception when you want to stay in touch with your crew.
I radioed the boys back to Happy Afloat for drinks and a snack.
Over 11 seas, we had a history lesson from Mum.
Yeah, Mum, what was the history lesson?
Well, it was about the Battle of the Shirts.
What is the Battle of the Shirts?
Well, I'm glad you asked, Jason. The Battle of the Shirts, as relayed by somebody that we met who was either a lock keeper or a boat owner, can't remember, So it was a battle in 1544 between two clans who were fighting for leadership. And it was a very hot July day. And so it goes that they decided to take off their plaids or their tartan things from under their chainmail. And they were just fighting in their bare shirts. They didn't have all their chainmail on or something along those lines. And it was a very bloody battle, made the locks go red. Charming. So, yeah, that was the Battle of the Shirts, as I remember it.
Why didn't they call it the Battle of the Red Lock?
Yeah, why, Mum?
I don't know.
That's one version of the story. And as it turns out, the Gaelic for Battle of the Shirts, if you change one letter, I think it's an A for an I, in that sentence, it then translates to Field of the Swampy Meadow. Which historians think that is the actual name of battle. It's all because of the terrain and nothing to do with shirts at all.
And it was by the Lagan Lock End.
Yes.
But that's interesting because when I Googled it this morning and was reading it, it referred to the Swampy Meadow.
So the whole Battle of the Shirts thing could be complete nonsense and just a mispronunciation of a word. But anyway, yes, the Battle of the Shirts or the Battle of the Field of the Swampy Meadow, whichever you prefer. After coffee and cake, it was time for everyone to stretch their legs and explore the castle. Yep, let's go have a look at this castle. See if we like it. See if we're going to move in.
This is up a dirt pass.
Yeah, I hope it's got running water.
If it doesn't, could we make it work?
I think in the era that this castle was built, running water is what you had coming through the ceiling. When the roof had a hole in it.
Well, how do we get water in the castle then?
Buckets, I would have thought, from the lock.
Do you think it'd live in the castle?
Yeah, we'll have a look at it first, see what we think.
Let's go up then. There's the castle.
I think it's going to need a bit of work.
I think so too.
Right, read out the warning sign.
Invergarry Castle warning. These ruins are dangerous. They have been fenced off to exclude the public from danger. Do not go within the fenced area. If you ignore this warning, you do so at your peril. And should any injury or loss occur, you have no claim against the owners. Under the Occupier's Liability, Scotland Act 1960 or otherwise.
Right, shall we go and try and have an explore then?
Well, it's clear. Is the padlocked off?
Oh, you can easily get over that fence.
The castle was quite small, more of a keep, really, and a bit of a ruin.
We admired the centuries of history from outside as it was fenced off for safety.
It didn't look like we could move in any time soon.
We then stumbled over an art trail that took us for a stroll through some nearby woodland.
And beautiful scenery before heading back to the boat.
We carefully retraced our track back to the main channel.
And onwards to the end of Loch Oik, passing through another swing bridge and into Lagan Locks.
This stretch of the canal is the most beautiful in our view, as you pass through a heavily wooded area.
We imagined that we were sailing up the Amazon.
Lagan Locks are the start of the downward journey. No more throwing lines up to the lock keepers.
Just as Mum had got the hang of throwing lines without dropping them in the water.
The whole locking procedure was changing.
Now, I would be perfecting my lassoing technique. Down the double locks at Lagan we went.
Only 13 more locks to go.
Into Loch Lockie.
That's a lot of locky words there.
It was at this point a new competition started.
Who would spot the tallest mountain in the UK first?
The name of the tallest mountain in the UK?
Ben Nevis.
And who spotted Ben Nevis first?
Must have been me.
Me! I've got better eyesight.
Really? Fortunately, I've got a bit of audio where you don't know where it is, so it's okay.
Yeah, good point.
Where's Nevis?
Mountain at the back, it's the mountain behind that one.
Oh, so it's not the one with the banana of snow?
No, it's the one behind it. It's covered up by the mountain. It's covered up by the clouds.
We wouldn't see Ben Nevis until the next day.
as the sky was now filling with clouds.
After Loch Lochy,
we were going to stay the night at Gairlochy.
Do you get the feeling that they sort of gave up on the names and just...
There are plenty of pontoons here, but most of them are rather short fingers.
We grabbed a hammerhead where some locals were fishing.
I asked them if the fishing was good. Very good, apparently. Trout that have escaped from the nearby fish farm are caught regularly.
The facilities along the canal are variable, to say the least. After the Seaport Marina, the facilities ranged from non-existent to barely passable.
The last time we stayed at Gairlochy, we rated them as okay-ish.
Mum was keen to use the laundry facilities and keen for us to have showers.
I was also keen for a warm shower. However, when it was my turn, only a cold shower was available, which was disappointing. And now it's raining, so a cold trudge back to the boat.
The next day was going to be a big one.
We would be tackling the famous Neptune staircase.
Fingers crossed that the rain would stop.
The next morning was indeed another sunny start, and Gairlochy was busy.
You've got to say Gairlochy Lock, just to get all the Lucky Lock Lock words in there.
The next morning was indeed another sunny start, and Gairlochy Lock was busy.
Before we could go down the two locks and swing bridge,
a load of charter motorboats were coming up.
We decided to avoid the chaos and stay safely moored until everyone was clear of the lock.
A random mix of novice drivers, I didn't want to find out who did or didn't know the rules of the road.
Do you remember when we tied up on the pontoons and that motor cruiser came in and beached itself?
Beached itself?
Yeah, it went aground. That night, when we tied up and the fishing people had gone, a motor cruiser came in. They were kind of on a bit of a booze cruise by the looks of it. And they were trying to park their boat and they just ran themselves aground.
Oh, they didn't bother mooring it. They just ran aground and stepped off the boat.
Yeah.
Because they've got their bumper strip on it, they do treat it like a bumper car.
Yeah.
Pretty much.
So, with Gairlochy behind us, there was just one swing bridge before we reached Banavy and the start of Neptune Staircase.
At Banavy, we moored alongside one of the very long pontoons.
And went to track down a lock keeper to book a passage down the eight locks and two swing bridges.
We found the keepers in their hut. After a brief chat, we established that we would be going down after lunch.
To keep the crew's spirit up for the long locking down procedure to come,
we were bribed with ice cream.
But the Lockside Cafe refused to sell us ice cream before noon.
The crew were now close to mutiny.
Neptune Staircase is very touristy, as the flight of locks is so photogenic.
And the spectacle of boats progressing up or down the steep slope is a sight to behold.
We would be on show to the world, especially as, again, we'd be the only boat locking down in the afternoon time slot.
Mum made us put on clean clothes.
We received the call from the lock keepers just as our lunch came out of the oven. The soda bread with sun-dried tomatoes was quickly cut up and put into a large mixing bowl.
It would be lunch on the go,
which we passed around the crew as we progressed downwards when the boat was conveniently at the same level as the shoreside crew.
To ourselves.
Wait, it won't take long if we've got it to ourselves.
It'll
be quicker.
Hello again, who's there? Hello. Right, I understand. I can speak dentist as well. Because it's many languages, you know. I'm a full mouth dentist.
Thank you.
This is Capelian. Right, guys, we need two guys off to work ropes.
Charlie, I'm...
Right. We're there to help anyway, so just give... You're not sure about anything, guys, just give us a shout. I'm Ben, by the way. I'll be your flight attendant.
Now, the locks are 200 years old, and there are no modern safety features.
There are no barriers to stop the public falling into the lock.
And there are no gates to stop unsupervised toddlers trying to run across the lock gate when it's open.
Thankfully, lock keepers have eyes in the back of their heads.
And the errant youngster was grabbed just as he was about to plunge into the lock.
There were no other dramas on the way down, and progress was quick.
Before we could leave the last lock, we had to wait for the final two bridges to swing.
A road bridge and a railway bridge.
And speed was of the essence. There are now dark, angry skies above.
The lock keeper was worried about lightning, and so were we.
The last time we were here, there was a lightning strike on the railway bridge,
which knocked out the ability to swing the bridge for an hour or so until repaired.
That year, I had my birthday party stuck in a lock.
Well, that was Neptune's staircase. It's probably the easiest locking down we've had on that staircase.
Hour and 15 minutes in total.
What a result.
It's a winner.
So the only mishaps are you can't buy an ice cream in this town unless it's after 12. And that little toddler that almost jumped in.
And what?
You'll see the toddler as the bridge was closing before it had closed, and then it just literally just gone a little bit around. He started to run across it.
The toddler toddled.
With no
parents
or adult supervision.
I said to
a lot of people was
having kittens.
Yes, that's really magic.
I think I did the most work.
Do you?
Do you?
Think Mum was slacking off again?
Well, don't tell Dad that.
The crew had done an amazing job of completing the staircase so quickly and efficiently.
And our teenager had done a fantastic job of pulling his weight.
Only three more locks to go.
Corpac Basin at the other end of the canal was less than a nautical mile away now.
Two more locks and we were in the basin where we would stop for the night.
Only one lock between us and the open water.
Soon we will be back at sea.
But that is a story for another time. Okay, guys. Is there anything else we need to add to the Caledonian Canal episode? Tons, I should imagine. The canals were very quiet, though, weren't they?
They were.
We've never been on any of those flights on our own.
No.
And we only shared the first flight out of the Muirtown flight with one boat.
Oh, yes, we did when we came out, yeah, seaport.
And after that, we had all the flights to ourselves, which is unheard of, because usually they ran them up full.
There was a distinct lack of Scandi boats. There's normally quite a few Scandi boats there, but because of COVID rules and allowing people into the country.
Yeah, there wasn't very many. It was very, very quiet.
It was.
And it was even quiet with the charter boats as well, the motorboat charter boats. There wasn't very many of those either.
Yeah.
Okay, so top tips for getting through the canal. First of all, download the Skipper's Guide to the Canal because it actually tells you everything you need to know.
Yeah, it does.
If you just give that a good read.
On the Scottish Canals website.
Yes, you'll be well prepared. I think they give you a copy of it when you cough up your money.
Yeah.
But that's exactly the same version that's online, so you can just download it. And it's not up to date because it didn't have the new bridge on it.
No. It's really simple.
Yeah.
To go through the canal, really.
Exactly. After you've done your first couple of locks, you'll be sort of pretty sorted. You rarely drop the lines in the water after you've worked out how to heave the lines
up. You're more likely to whack the lock keeper in the face with the line.
Well, that is the problem. They get quite annoyed if you, one, drop the line in the water, because when you throw it up to the next time, they get a wet line,
yeah,
which they don't really like. And if you throw them too hard, they end up getting a line in the face, which they don't like either.
No. But they're very personal. Actually, the lock keepers are very personable. I don't think we've ever come across a grumpy one or anything.
No, they're all very good.
They're very nice and polite. And
so our setup then. I suppose you should actually describe what the locks are like. They're not shiny, brand new locks. They are 200-year-old locks.
And you don't want to scrape top sides on them.
No, they're all rough, slimy. So you want to protect your top sides. How do we protect our top sides?
We have got a tarpaulin, which we bought at great expense from Tool Station, I think.
So you put a tarpaulin next to the hull and then fenders then on top of that.
On top of that.
Because the fenders will pick up grit, stone, dirt, slime, and all sorts from the lock wall. Yeah.
And then we put a fender board on the outside of our fenders.
To try and protect the fenders
a little
bit.
Fenders a bit, which does work.
Yeah, the only problem with the fender board is you have to be a bit careful when manoeuvring on and off the wall because the fender board can catch, depending on the angle. So you have to be a bit careful if you do use a fender board, but it is quite a useful addition to give you extra protection.
And what do we use for our fender board? What have we got?
We've just got a length of, I don't know.
Is it decking plank or something? Or
no,
just
it's a plank. A softwood plank that we serve. We oil up so it looks nice going to Scotland. And after you've been through the locks and all your oil and varnish is scraped off, it then looks the right state.
Yeah, that's fine.
Which is an indication of why you actually need one, because it does get sort of, the surface is completely gouged.
Yeah. You need long lines as well. Actually, that's an interesting one. You go into the first lock, when you go into the sea lock, whichever end you're going into, there's always a boat that doesn't have lines that are long enough.
Yeah, I think they recommend you have lines. You need at least two warps of 15 metres.
Yeah.
And if you haven't, I guess when we've had lines that have been too short, we've just tied two together.
Yeah.
But our lines tend to be long enough because we make sure that our lines are, 1.5 times the length of our boat, don't we? So
we didn't have a problem this time. And the only lock, which is it the gear locky, which is quite deep, I think we kind of went through this time.
There's a double lock there. I think it
depends. Yeah, it's double height, isn't it? Yeah. But they've got lines that they permanently rigged up that you can use because they're not expecting you to have lines that long.
Yeah, exactly, because it's quite a deep lock, as you say, yes. Big step. The other thing is, if you're going to rig up all your tarps and fender boards and what have you, what happens is once we've rigged up, we keep them all out. We don't get them in.
No.
We don't pull it all in between locks because you're traveling short distances, isn't it?
And you tend to just leave them on the one side rather than swap sides every time you go to a lock.
If you're sensible, you do.
Yeah.
So if you're going to be sensible and always have them rigged up on one side, which side should you have them rigged up on?
If you're going from the east coast to the west coast, you want to be rigged up starboard side too.
Why is that?
Because that's the side where all the lock keepers have their stations, the control units. So they will be on your starboard side. So they're going to be able to help you out quicker than those that are moored port side too.
Yeah, well, the lock controls.
That's the word.
Yes, the lock controls are on the
starboard side when you're going from east to west.
Yes, or port side if you're going the opposite direction.
Yeah.
So, yeah, if you're rigged up on the right side, you always get that side too. And the lock keeper will always be there, especially
more
as
more favourable.
Yeah, it'll be there to grab your lines and let your lines off. Whereas if you're on the other side of the lock, you're not going to get so much help, especially when the gates are open because it can't really get to you easily. So that's your top tip.
But yes, we did come across a boat that insisted on taking their fenders in every time they'd gone through a lock and then asking which side two they should go.
Yeah, the funny thing about that is that was at the halfway point, and you would have thought after you'd gone through 15 or so locks.
It was, wasn't it? You would have
decided this is a real pain, bringing them in and putting them out every 5 minutes. But there you
might
go.
Give them something to do.
Well, maybe it's a part of their exercise routine, I don't know. If you're a novice with locks, don't let the Caledonian Canal put you off, because by the time you've done 29 of them, you will be an expert on manoeuvring your boat in tight spaces and locking in and out.
To be honest, given the assistance you get, I actually think it's less stressful than taking a boat into a marina that's a locked marina.
Well, it's because it's not tidal.
It's not tidal.
So you haven't got
to
fight a tide.
Yeah. So it's actually a lot more straightforward.
The only stressful bit from a helming point of view is trying to keep the boat stationary when you've got a bit of a wind blowing.
Oh, yeah.
Because then you get blown around the canal, and obviously a canal, you don't have a lot of room, so it does involve a bit of reversing and motoring to one side of the canal to then be slowly blown across the other side without trying to block the canal, because you can't sort of no point into the wind, because if the wind's going across the canal, and then you have to keep it clear for the boats coming out of locks, so that can be a bit of an issue if it's too breezy, but it's not usually much of an issue. And then obviously once you're in the lock, you get more shelter from the wind. And I suppose the only other thing I would like to bring up is pizza stone then.
We haven't got the pizza stone yet.
No, I just thought, pizza stone.
Yeah.
After poo-pooing the idea.
Yeah, I did poo-poo the idea. And, who needs a pizza stone?
on a yacht.
I think I'd like to say is once you've had a barbecue pizza, you can never go back to oven pizzas. Off the back of the pizza stone on the boat, then what happened?
We got a pizza stone for the house barbecue as well.
Yeah, the barbecue at home. And now what happens on pizza night?
You stand out in the freezing cold in the middle of winter, even when it's raining, so we can have barbecue pizza. But more on the pizza stone on another episode.
We love feedback.
A big thank you to everyone who has posted a review or sent us a message. And thank you to Simon for the feedback via Facebook and to Damon for the 5-star review on Audible.
Ooh, thank you.
And a big thank you to Alex for buying us a generous helping of ice cream via our website.
Wow, thank you.
If you have any questions,
send an email or a posting on Facebook. All relevant links are on the website happyafloat.com.
If you'd like to help us grow, spread the word. As I told my brother when he visited the pick and mix counter, it's nice to share.
And don't forget to follow and rate us in your favourite podcast app.
If you're also an Audible listener, this is a gentle reminder to pull your finger out and leave us a review.
If you do post a review somewhere, send us a message so we can track it down and mention you in the podcast.
Happyafloat.com.
A few words about the 3D audio experience, which we know some of you are enjoying.
All the audio clips are recorded binaurally on a custom-built microphone setup.
Who we call Ed Head.
Because he records audio like a human head hears sound.
Which means that when played back on headphones, you will be transported to the cockpit of Happy Afloat, surrounded by sound.
Although we have hours of audio, only a few minutes makes it into the podcasts when we are having a vaguely interesting conversation that moves the story narrative along.
If you like the ambient sound experience, let us know and we will release bonus episodes of lightly edited immersive audio for you to enjoy. Next time aboard Happy Afloat.
What awaits us beyond the canal?
Until next time, happy sailing.
Don't forget, after the music, there will be an immersive 3D sound experience. Put your headphones on, close your eyes, and enjoy. Thank you.
Thank you.